Hello and welcome to Empowerment. I'm Kelly Whetstone. Thank you for joining me today. It is 10 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesday, June 17th, 2025. As always, I am happy to be with you today, whenever today is for you, whenever it is that you're listening to this show. The energy is there. The energy is there. So I am very happy to be with you, as I said, whenever you're listening to this show. It's an interesting day today in Denver, where I am anyway. It's, you know, I've talked about how we had really wonderful rainy days the beginning week, I think, of June, end of May, first of June, and then it went into the 80s and 90s, like, bam. That's the thing. You know, I was having so much fun going out and working in my garden. And now it's like, if I'm going to do it, I better do it at 6 a.m. because it just gets hot. And that really takes the fun out of it for me. I'm just not a hot weather person. I'm not, as much as I realize you go along with the season and the more you flow with it, the better off you are. I am not a summer person. I love winter, I love spring, I love fall, but summer's not my deal. So that's my time to just look at that, you know, and you know, it is what it is. It's not going to change. So if I want a different experience, I need to change my attitude. That's all there is to it. But what was really cool is this morning at about 4 o'clock, we had this massive thunderstorm. I mean, yesterday was 90, 91 or 92. This morning, it's just, I kept hearing stuff. And I sleep with earplugs, because I used to do it because of noise. But now, it just creates a little sleeping cocoon for me. So when I lay down to go to sleep at night, I put my earplugs in, and I don't know. It's just kind of a lovely space. And I've done that for several years. So I have earplugs in. Like, hearing this crashing and this noise of really heavy rain hitting the roof. And here it was. And now it's really cool outside. I don't know if it's even 60 degrees. It was supposed to be about 70 something. It was supposed to cool off. But it is just beautiful out there. And I watered yesterday, and so my lawn got an extra drink this morning, and it's supposed to. I think it's going to rain more because there are rain clouds out there. And I think we're supposed to have more rain probably around 5 o'clock or so. But what a blessing. You know, that's just a blessing to me, and that's so energizing. And the other thing I'm really excited about and energized by is that my son, daughter-in-law, and my three little grandkids get into town this weekend, and they'll stay with me for a little more than a week. And I'm just so looking forward to it. It'll be so much fun. They had their birthdays last week, and they had their big party on Saturday, and they'll get here, and it'll just be fun. You know, we'll go to the Children's Museum or do whatever they want to do. You know, I'll be taking the majority of the week off. I'll be on when they have other things to do online. But to have that family time and to have them here in my house, I'm just so excited about it. It will be really, really fun. And then the following weekend, next weekend, is our family reunion in the mountains. So my grandchildren will discover a whole bunch of cousins that they've never met before. And they're all about their same age. So I think that's just going to be fun. I think it will be a blast, and it'll be really fun to watch them interact, you know, and just meet a whole different, like, Quinn was up there last year for the reunion with my, Jared and Kristen came and brought Quinn, but the two little ones haven't. And so I just think it'll be really cool. And I'm really looking forward to that too. But I just want to say thanks again to you for listening today. And if you can, please join us in the chat room. Just go to 12radio.com and click chat. Feel free to comment or ask questions about the teaching segment, and I will answer them after the show. If you would like a reading from me, you can find me every day on onetolisten.com. I'm available usually mid to later morning Pacific time into the evening. If you stop by and don't see me, or if I happen to be busy, just schedule a call, put in a call back request. I'm notified immediately. I'll get back to you as soon as I can, and I'll always do my best to meet your schedule. So, and another reminder that I give you every single week is we have reduced rates a few times a week on 12listen.com, typically Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday. I know Friday is the summer solstice, so we will be celebrating that first day of summer. But if you want to be notified of our specials, just go to 12listen.com and sign up for 12 promotions. I have a new Here Comes the Sun Welcome Summer 15-minute time-based session available. That will be my seasonal time-based session through summer. And really, in this session, we'll just move energetic blocks that keep you from shining your light. I mean, this really is the brightest time of the year. So, you know, whatever's in your way from being you, you know, summer aside, summer's just the vibration, the metaphor that we can use for shining your light, experiencing your good, being who you are, and being happy with who you are. And that is possible. That is really possible. You know, limiting beliefs, doubt, fear, unworthiness, all of that stuff are nothing but a bunch of lies. Bunch of lies. It's erroneous energy in your space, which is why they can all be released so that you can experience your greatest expression. It's really a great healing. So I encourage you to try it out. Time-based sessions are great because you pay for a block of time, in this case, 15 minutes. And you buy them and you use them whenever you're ready. So I just want to, as I was talking about, you know, taking advantage of the energy of the season, Henry David Thoreau, this is a lovely quote from him. He said, "Live in each season as it passes. Breathe the air, drink the drink, taste the fruit, and resign yourself to the influence of the earth." Perfect. Go with the flow of the season. Don't resist it. And you'll get the most benefit from it. That's a note to self. Purposefully notice and appreciate the good because it's always there. It's always there. And if we can redirect our dissatisfaction over anything, not necessarily hot weather, but over anything to something good, because there is always something good, always something good to focus on, to see, or to just shift your thought away from what feels negative, or from what's bogging you down or a worry spin, to something that you love. And just keep doing it. Sacrifice every idea, every thought, every emotion that is not feeling good. Offload it, sacrifice it, surrender it to the universe, and then focus on what you love. And that thing, good always triumphs over evil. It does, because evil is nothing. It no power. So focusing on something good, something beautiful, something that you love to do, expands that in your experience. And focus is our superpower. Attention is our superpower because it grows whatever it is focused on, whether it be good, bad, or indifferent. So anyway, that was a little lesson. I want to remind you of the gratitude board on 12listen.com as well. Same line of thought. Post what you're grateful for, whether it's in your experience or not. The advisors of 12listen will add our intention to yours, and you can post anonymously. So why not? Why not? It's our way to support you. Please let us do that. And I want to thank you again for listening to 12 Radio, however and whenever you do. There is programming on 12 Radio 24/7, and there are archives of all the shows from all the hosts in the on-demand section of 12radio.com. You can download them anytime you want. And 12 Radio is a great source of inspiration, information, and support, and most of all, passion. From many different sources. So please take advantage. Please take advantage. It's only up to us to stay inspired, to keep our corks afloat, as Abraham would say. So however we do that, we do it. And 12 Radio is just an offering. in that regard. I just want to say thank you to Serena for producing the show today and for all that she does for us on 1-2 Radio. Let's move into the teaching segment by listening to a song called "The In the Between," "In the Between," by Zingaya from the Souls on Earth CD and Sequoia Records. Enjoy it, and I'll be back right after. You're listening to Empowerment. I'm Kelly Whetstone. I'm happy you're here.
Thank you.
Welcome back. Excuse me, I hold on one sec. Sorry about that. It's funny, you don't know that's coming until you start talking. Just had a sip of honey water. Must be because I'm very excited to talk to you today and to just share some wonderful teachings that I've been experiencing on mysticism, of course, my favorite thing. You know, Neville said, I always quote Neville because this is the best quote, God is known by experience or not at all. Man's purpose is to know and demonstrate God. And that's been the common theme in the books that I've been reading and listening to on Audible. Totally different authors saying the same things in different ways, which, you know, that's beautiful because, again, we all, pardon me, we all hear things differently. And everyone is in a different place in their evolution. And that place, wherever we are, is perfect. But it goes, the old saying, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And that's why as we grow and evolve and in our learning and in our spiritual growth and in our hunger to know more, to expand, then, you know, a teacher that was fantastic for us a few years ago that was just like everything, like, you know, food for our soul, all of a sudden we're in a different place. And they still hold that kind of sacred space for us, you know, or that love that we had for them then doesn't go away because we wouldn't be where we are now without what they gave to us then. So it's all, you know, it's all building blocks. But again, we all hear and receive in a different way because no one is in the same evolution. We're all different. We're all, you know, individualization of the individualized source, and God doesn't repeat himself, you know, and God's not a he, but I'm gonna call him that just because he doesn't mind, I'm sure. But anyway, these three teachings that I'm going to share, and it's going to be pretty much just that's what I'm doing today, is sharing these beautiful lessons, are just magical to me. You know, they were just incredible. I started listening to, on Audible, a new book that I'd not, that was different, an Alan Watts book that was different from the ones that I've read and listened to over and over and over. And it's called Behold the Spirit, A Study in the Necessity of Mystical Religion. And man, it's deep. It's really deep. Because like there's like an introduction to the introduction. And then there's a whole bunch of stuff that happens before like chapter one of the book. And it's he was an Anglican priest at one time, and he studied religion. And I can't remember what his degree, what his status was in his studies, but I mean, it's incredible. And he kind of starts it by talking about religions, Protestantism, Catholicism, you know, all different ones. And one thing that he said was that man gets caught up in the ritual and the forms of God, missing the fact that he is the individualization of God. And so that's kind of like the That's kind of like the first step here. So, you know, God is individualized in every man, every man. Nobody is missing the God factor. Nobody could be. And the purpose of every man is to demonstrate God, or as Michael Beckwith said, to reveal the face of the divine. So I'm going to share three powerful lessons on the subject that made both my head and heart explode. And they are just wonderful and magical. And I just invite you to sit back and listen. Again, the first one is from Behold the Spirit, Alan Watts' book. He wrote, "Mystical religion is not a technique, a remedy that may be humanly applied. It is the operation of the Holy Spirit. Mysticism is necessary. You must love God with your entire being, but it cannot be achieved by imitation. There is no rule, no method, no formal technique whatsoever that one may simply copy and attain the knowledge and love of God. One thing is needful, is absolutely necessary, and yet we can never say, 'Do this and it'll be yours.' Despite the countless attempts and the innumerable claims to do or have done this very thing, it cannot be done. There are a million methods for expressing the knowledge and love of God, but not one for attaining it. And yet the thing happens. God is known and God is loved. We can no more find a method for knowing God than for making God, because the knowledge of God is God Himself dwelling in the soul. The most we can do is to prepare for His entry, to get out of His way, or remove the barriers. For until God Himself acts within us, there is nothing positive that we can do in this direction. We may, however, be certain that He will act, indeed, that He's already acting, though we have difficulty in becoming aware of this action because we are always trying to put imitations and substitutes of our own in its place. We fail to see through the window because we're painting pictures on the glass. Nothing, therefore, can happen until we have given up every method and contrivance for possessing God, in the faith that whether we feel it or know it or not, God possesses us entirely and inescapably here and now. For there is no other possession of God than to let oneself be possessed by God. Mysticism is an action in the passive." He goes on to write, oh my gosh, I don't know about you, but honestly, my head and my heart are exploding already, because that just fills me up. That just is beautiful. And he's so eloquent. I love the way Alan Watts writes. So he goes on to say, "To be alive spiritually, man must have union with God and must be conscious of it. Apart from this union, his religious life will be an empty drudgery, a mere imitation of spirituality. But there is no formal technique whereby man can attain either the union or its conscious realization. God, the infinite life, cannot be grasped in forms. Because union with God is the goal, the very meaning of human existence, its apparent absence shows a radical defect in our nature. A defect whose clear symptom is precisely our attempt to possess God in so many different ways. Human desire differs from animal desire in that it is at its root insatiable. Man is characterized by a hunger for the infinite, for an eternity of life, love, and joy, which, whether he knows it or not, can be nothing other than God. Assuming God exists, it will follow that God is man's true end, for the appetite of a living organism shows its function. The stomach hungers for food because its function is to digest food. As physical taste and hunger may often be mistaken as to their true object, desiring nothing but caviar instead of a balanced diet, man is often mistaken as to the goal of his life, desiring wealth, power, or physical pleasure instead of God. But his real appetite continues to be God, for which these lesser goals are always unsatisfactory substitutes. Those who set their hearts on finite goals are always discontented. They must always have more and more and more of what they desire, and failing this, are frustrated and miserable. Profound content is only enjoyed by animals and primitives in whom infinite hunger has not been awakened. And thus it is that, known or unknown, God is the ultimate object of human desire, whether that desire is highly spiritual or grossly sensual. Assuming further that God is love, the goal of love is always union with its object. If man is therefore a creation and an object of the divine love, union with God is likewise the true end of man from the divine standpoint. From this same standpoint, the true end of all creatures, not man alone, is union with God. But only in man has the end become conscious. Only man can love God consciously. Other creatures are drawn toward him blindly and have no will in the matter. They just know. That was an interjection. The conscious love of God is only possible for a free soul. The freedom to love God, to give oneself to God, involves also the freedom not to love. God is the most obvious thing in the world. He's absolutely self-evident, the simplest, clearest, and closest reality of life and consciousness. We are only aware of him because we are too complicated, for our vision is darkened by the complexity of pride. We seek him beyond the horizon with noses lifted high in the air, and fail to see that he lies at our feet. We flatter ourselves in premeditating the long, long journey we're going to take in order to find him, the giddy heights of spiritual progress we're going to scale, and all the time we are unaware of the truth that God is nearer to us than we are to ourselves. We are like birds flying in quest of the air, or man with lighted candles searching through the darkness for fire. The self-evidence of God is the result of his love and is one with the gift of union with himself, which he bestows upon us. For God is not ungenerous in his self-revelation. He creates us to know him, and short of actual compulsion, does everything possible to present himself to our consciousness. Oh, that's just fabulous. I just had to take a breath before I go on to Ram Dass, which is a whole different voice, whole different voice. Okay, so this is from Ram Dass's book, Grist for the Mill. And it's a chapter called The Evolutionary Cycle. And I believe Grist for the Mill, if I'm correct, is just a book of his lectures. And this one is called The Evolutionary Cycle. And I really, again, whole different voice, Ram Dass in the 60s and 70s versus, you know, Alan Watts writing that. I don't even, that was probably written in maybe the 40s, 30s or 40s. I'm not sure. Anyway, so let's shift our, you know, let's get into a different flow here, because Ram Dass is definitely a different flow. But again, just listen, you know, just let yourself have it. Float along with what's being said. Just float along in the stream. Don't struggle. Don't struggle with anything. Just allow yourself to have it. If it doesn't hit, you know, take what resonates, leave what doesn't, but don't struggle, because then you might miss out on something really good. So he wrote, During the late 60s and early 70s, there was a period of fanaticism in our spiritual involvement. We were importing models from the East at a great rate and trying very hard to convert ourselves. But consistent with our tradition of doing things from the outside in, although we were taking on a lot of the symbols and accoutrements, we may have looked like Buddha from the outside. From inside, we were just somebody who was trying to look like Buddha. We were very confused about vows and commitments, the relationship to teachers, the whole concept of guru, and what the journey was about. In the 60s, the word God was still taboo. So we talked about, quote-unquote, altered states of consciousness. Implicit in all that we were doing was still an attachment to the fact that we could do it, and that who we were or who we thought we were could change ourselves and become whatever it was that Buddha was or Christ was. That is, we were living in a culture in which man ruled nature within obvious boundaries, and we were so addicted to the rational mind and its power that we assumed we could think our way out of any predicament. We could figure out a new way to be through our thoughts and through our doing. But the predicament is that enlightenment is not an achievement. Enlightenment is a transformation of being, and the achiever goes as well as the achievement. Back to Alan Watts, but there is no formal technique whereby man can attain either the union or its conscious realization. God, the infinite life, cannot be grasped in forms. Ram Dass said, most of us didn't bargain for the implications of this trip we found ourselves on. We started to understand that it might have something to do with what I'd been talking about as what had been talked about as God, or a coming to God, or if you'd rather deal with the unmanifest, the state of nirvana. And we really didn't want them, we wanted to want them. That's a different level of the game. For most of us, it had been quite enough to want God, or to want enlightenment. That kept us cool, safe, secure, with a feeling that we were moving in the right direction. It gets a little scary when you start to disappear into the void. Now, the strength in us lies in being honest with ourselves about our predicament. We've tasted of something. We're drawn to it as a moth towards a flame. We recognize our own fear. There is less melodrama and dramatic histrionics, and we are patiently and insistently doing the purification of being necessary for this transformation to occur. Realizing that we can't grab it. We tried that. Nor can we ignore it. We all tried that. The melodrama is passing away. We recognize now that we are bringing our external world genuinely and honestly into harmony with our inner perceptions. And we don't need to try so hard to create an external space to prove anything. We're developing a deeper philosophical understanding of the predicament we are in as mutants, as evolving beings. We're listening inside to see what it is that's keeping us from that place or space or realization or connection that we have touched, tasted, felt, or somehow know about, and we're starting to find the methods to get on with the work. We've begun to understand that, though we gather as a group and listen to one another, each of us is in a unique predicament or evolution, and that you must listen to your own heart to hear what you need. You can't imitate anybody else's trip. To characterize these individual differences in terms of evolution, let me share with you a model. That is just a model. Imagine an evolutionary clock. At 12 o'clock, there is perfect harmony. The Tao, as the Chinese say, the way, that Christ talks about. The perfect balance, the inner relationship of all things with nothing separate, each in its proper place. The tree is the perfect tree. The river is the perfect river. The human being is the perfect human being, all in its perfection. At 1 minute after 12, something is separate. At 12, it was the Garden of Eden, perfect harmony and balance. Then a bite of the apple, and suddenly they're wearing fig leaves. And God is asking, who told you you were naked? Where did shame come from? It came from self-consciousness, small s, self-consciousness. And where did self-consciousness come from? It came from identifying with your thinking mind and thus experiencing yourself as separate from that which you think about. At 12:01, duality has been created. Subject, object, thinker, and that which is thought. Separateness. From 12:01 to 6, there is a continuous attempt to solidify, protect, and increase the power of your position as a separate entity, to create security, gratification, power over the world around you, to recreate the feeling of well-being that existed when you weren't, but now you are, meaning a separate you. When everything was one, there was no you. You were just one with everything. He writes, let's just imagine that 12 o'clock is a sort of total perfection. Although it's obviously unlabelable, we'll call it God. Now God has within its perfection the freedom for any entity, such as a human entity, to pit its will against the total will, or God's will. So at first there were beings pitting themselves against the system, against the harmony. Then everybody was quote-unquote us, and quote-unquote them were the forces of nature, the storms, and so on. But between 12:01 and 6, a bizarre thing happened. Slowly, quote-unquote them, started to become others of us. Our tribe was us, and other tribes were them. Then within the tribe was the family, and pretty soon it was our family, and everybody else was them. And eventually, somebody in the family messes up, and they are them. And the separation goes on and on and on, to include ourselves being separate from ourselves. But from 6:01, your desire is to get back to God, which includes many lifetimes. Ram Dass writes, as the experiential clock ticks on, you keep developing in your understanding of how it's all working, and you begin to recognize a peculiar phenomenon that, as C.S. Lewis points out, you don't see the center of the universe because it's all center. That you, in fact, are the center of the universe, which has been designed perfectly in order to awaken you out of the illusion, and that every experience you have is equally valid as grist for the mill of awakening. Your whole incarnation is the teaching. Next, you begin to realize that although they are all equal in teaching quality, some of your experiences seem to shake you more than others. That the model, which you're stuck in, sometimes so subtly that you don't even know it, is shaken by pain and suffering and all the negative qualities. At that point, you recognize the bizarre phenomenon that suffering is grace. Now that's heavy. Because up until that time, you've been trying to optimize pleasure and minimize pain. When you realize that in its fullest dimension, you may still live to optimize pleasure and minimize pain. But whatever comes down the pike is all right. Ultimately, you understand that the truth must be balanced with the caring, with the honoring of this incarnation. That is when you develop the capacity to look up and look down at the same time, to look in and look out. When you look at pure truth, you can see the grace that suffering is. From your point of view, when you're suffering, quote unquote, fine, I'm suffering, that's interesting. In other words, I'm interjecting here. You become the observer of that suffering. You're using it. You're using it to find out what you need to, what you're clinging to. That's what you're using it for. When you suffer, it's because you're clinging to something. You want something to be different. So you're clinging on to that desire for something to be different. It's not different. It's not changing. And you're suffering. But when you have that capacity to look up and look down at the same time, it is what it is. I have something to learn here. As he said, fine, I'm suffering. That's interesting. At the same moment, he writes, if you're looking down and honoring your incarnation, you're working to alleviate suffering. And he gives this example. He says, somebody says, I want to study yoga with you. I want to fast. And you say, all right, fast for 9 days. At the end of the 7th day, they say, I fasted for 7 days. And you say, wonderful, wonderful. You've got 2 more days to go. Then you walk outside the building and somebody comes up to you and says, hey man, you got a quarter? I haven't eaten in 7 days. You don't say, wonderful, wonderful. You have 2 more days to go. It's not an appropriate response, because for that being, suffering isn't grace. Suffering is a drag. Well, that's a great example. When, you know, the person that says, I want to fast, what you learn over a 9-day fast has to be pretty incredible. If you're present, has to be pretty incredible. I've never fasted for 9 days. But my personal truth, my personal experience in this regard is whatever is happening in my experience that I am suffering over is my lesson for my growth. But barring being really sick and not able to be of service in some way, the only way out of that suffering is to serve, to help, to give, to love. Because if you're a healer, if you're in service, then you are healed through healing. You are helped through helping. You know, it is in giving that we receive, it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is in dying that we are born to eternal life, Saint Francis. But that's it. That's how you get out. And that's, as he said, to help alleviate suffering. But to use whatever it is in your experience, the suffering that you're experiencing, as a lesson. You know, what is it? What am I clinging to? How can I get over this? You know, how can I get past this? How can I look it in the eye and release it? And if it takes a million times of doing it, just doing it until that burden is off your back and out of your energy and out of your space. So now, on to another completely and totally different voice, Joel. From the heart of mysticism, this is the chapter called Neither Good Nor Evil. He wrote, before we entered this room was a blank nothingness in which was no good and no evil. But as we enter, we find an atmosphere of love, cooperation, friendship, integrity, joy, simply because we brought it here. There is no dissension because each has come in the spirit of love, receiving from the Father and not from each other. On the other hand, had we brought antagonism, a sense of division, tension, and uneasiness would be evident. You can readily see that you are responsible for the attitude that surrounds you. God fills all space, but the presence of God could not prevent dissension if we had come in a controversial mood. God's presence fills this universe, but that does not prevent wars and aggression, simply because the people of the world are ignorant of the fact that the kingdom of God is within the individual. The majority are not united for the purpose of God realization, but instead are submerged in the material world of acquisition and conquest. And I just want to insert here, you know, we want more and more things, but the basis of wanting more and more things that make us feel good, that make us feel happy, is because we want to get back to the garden. We want to get back to who we were at 12 o'clock, you know, one with all that is, and one with in that beautiful love and atmosphere of God. So that's why we keep finding things, and it's been said in different ways by Alan Watts and Ram Dass, to try and fill that void, that truly imaginary void, because God is us. So there truly is no void. We just are unaware of it, as Alan Watts said. We're unaware that the truth of our being is God, is the kingdom of heaven within us, all the same thing. And that which we seek, we already are. Joel continues with, the law of God is love. Love is the fulfilling of the law, Romans 13:10. And the responsibility rests upon the individual to come into harmony with this law. Spiritual love has nothing to do with a sense of personal or emotional love. Spiritual love is the recognition of God as individual being, concurring that God is the life, mind, soul, and spirit of the individual being. First of all, that means you. You are self-sufficient, capital S. You are complete in the God self within your own being, and you do not look outside to any man, anything, or any condition. Because you are responsible only for your own demonstration, it is necessary that you know this is the truth about each member of your family and associates. By realizing that each is self-sufficient in God, you have no further responsibility or concern for another's demonstration. Each is free to make his demonstration according to his own light. It is only natural that you will cooperate in every way, but the greatest service of love you can render is in realizing that God is individual being and that each one is self-sufficient, self-maintained, self-sustained. When the Master said, I have meat to eat that ye know not of, he was saying that he was sustained by this inner selfhood. He further taught that this is true of you and me, and as we continue to realize this truth for ourselves, we realize it for the world. There are two forms of spiritual love. The first, and by far the most important, is set forth in the commandment, Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. As you behold mortality, from infancy to old age, from health to death, from saint to sinner, you are obedient to this commandment only if you realize that God is individual being, only if you realize that God is the soul, mind, spirit, and the law unto all being. This is the highest form of loving your neighbor as yourself, and it means no interference in another's life. The second is found in Matthew 25, verses 35 through 40. For when I was an hungered, you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me. Verily, I say unto you, inasmuch as you have done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, you have done it unto me. There are many opportunities to for healing the sick or to assist someone with human forms of good. But this is never done by endeavoring to live their lives for them. But as we are informed of some temporary need, we have the grace to share and then go on about our business with no sense that we had anything to do with it, because we did not. It is the grace of God that is all sufficiency. The only way to overcome the self, small s, is by realizing that no quality of God is personal, and also by not accepting error as personal. Whatever of good is performed through you is an activity of God, for which you are just the instrument. Whatever of evil is just a temporary falling under the spell of world hypnotism. And to complete our circle, I want to go back to Alan Watts. We can no more find a method for knowing God than for making God, because the knowledge of God is God himself dwelling in the soul. Nothing, therefore, can happen until we have given up every method and contrivance for possessing God, in the faith that, whether we feel it or know it or not, God possesses us entirely and inescapably here and now. For there is no other possession of God than to let oneself be possessed by God. Mysticism is an action in the passive. Thank you for being here. You've been listening to Empowerment. I'm Kelly Whetstone. We're here on 1-2 Radio, where we're changing the way that you listen to the world. Please stay tuned for Katie Weaver and have a very blessed week. Bye-bye.